Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. As I record this, it is Monday, August 27th, 2012. I'm Sam Minter, and once again, we have no Yvonne. You know, we had a few weeks without him, and, you know, hey, new baby, stuff going on, blah, 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 blah. And then we had a week back, and I was like, back into the groove. But no, no. This time, what is it? Tropical Storm Isaac. You know, really? And of course, more baby stuff. But I guess at our normal recording time was right around when Tropical Storm Isaac was going past Miami. And so Yvonne had various things going on regarding that. And so we tried to do it later in the day, and it didn't work out. And so here I am. So another solo show, and once again, without any advance notice, so I couldn't, like, round up a guest host, but we'll do this, and we'll once again, I'm going to do the thing with recording one segment a day. That's been working out pretty well for me. So we do have a number of things to talk about this week. The Apple Samsung verdict happened. We've of course got the Republican National Committee convention, the Republican National Convention coming up. Hurricane Isaac is threatening the Gulf Coast. And of course, the standard election update I'll do quickly. And finally, I thought I'd talk a little bit about, the little political quizzes that are going on. Every 4 years you see them. This year I posted on my website, I did the I Side With quiz, but they're, you know, every 4 years there's a whole bunch of them, and they're somewhat interesting, and should you pay any attention to them? Are they interesting, etc.? We'll talk about that. I do think I'm going to start with the election update, in part because, well, frankly, I don't have much time this morning. As I was saying before I was so rudely interrupted, I don't have much... I don't have much time this morning. So I'm going to do something quick, and then we'll talk about more substantive things in the next segment. But the quick election update, since the last time I recorded one of these shows, only been one update. And, you know, I put the show out Friday, and I included an update that had up through Friday, so... because I did the future Sam thing. So we're really only talking a couple days here. We're talking about my Saturday update and my Sunday update and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, there was only one change, which was Missouri. Got a little bit closer. Missouri was a state that Romney was ahead in by more than 5%. Now it looks a little closer than that, only 3.6%. So we put that in the toss-up. Technical difficulties are really starting to annoy me this morning. Anyway, we put Missouri in the toss-up category, which improves Obama's best case. His best case is now winning 368 to 170, which for the first time in a little while is better than what he actually did in 2008, which was 365 to 173. But the current status, everybody wins the states they're ahead on, remains where it has been for since middle of last week. Obama 303. Romney 235. Bottom line, despite this little move towards Obama in a state that he probably won't really win, we continue with the situation that August has been a really good month. Did I say McCain again? I don't know. Anyway, August has been a really good month for Romney. And puts him in the best position he's been in since February. And as we come into the conventions, generally there's a convention bump. So I kind of expect this to get even better for Romney over the next week or so. But we'll see. Of course, it looks like they're having an abbreviated convention. Their coverage of it may or may not be overshadowed with whatever goes on with Hurricane Isaac. Which depends a lot on, you know, hey, what happens with Hurricane Isaac? Does it actually come in as a major hurricane on a direct hit on New Orleans, which looked like a strong possibility at certain points over the weekend, maybe looking a little bit less so now, but uh, still a huge amount of uncertainty in the forecast? Or does it come in as a weaker hurricane missing major cities? You know, that'll make a big difference. Anyway, that's the update for now for the straight out numbers. We'll talk a little bit more about what else is going on in the election. And like I said, Apple, the convention, political quizzes, all that kind of stuff. But we'll do it later because I have to get ready to go to work. So we'll talk to you some more after this break. This is Future Sam here for a second. There have indeed been additional updates to the Electoral College analysis since I recorded that on Monday. But, you know, I realized, look, they're going to be every week unless I actually get these out, like, the same day, which is not likely. So just check election2012.ablesmay.com for the updates, and, you know, you'll get the most recent. Anyway, what you heard was as of Monday. Okay, back to the break and then the show.
You're in the Valley, AM 1620 and LigonierRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Come on,
baby. Let's do the twist. Well, they got a new dance and it goes like this.
I hit the radio dial and turned it up all the way.
I got a dance.
Dancing in the moonlight.
Classic music for a classic American town. AM 1620. And in stereo at LigonierRadio.com, The Valley.
Okay, well, before I start the next segment, I just want to let you guys know, I recorded the next segment. So this is like Future Sam, but Future Sam from only like an hour in the future. I recorded almost a 20-minute segment. And then after I finished recording it, I listened to a few seconds of it, and there was all kinds of horrible distortion and interference and static, and best I can gather, the microphone wasn't like plugged in properly and it was loose or something, or who knows. Anyway, obviously the microphone's okay now, so and all I did was unplug it and plug it back in. But the next segment, audio quality really sucks, and I want to apologize in advance. Now, I spent almost an hour futzing around with effects and compressors and filters and stuff to try to make it a little better. And believe me, it is a little better. Like listening to the raw version, the static, it was, yeah, anyway. Even the quote-unquote fixed version still really sucks. It's better, but that's not saying it's not saying it's good. Okay. It's just better than the original was. Okay. I got rid of the worst of it, but my voice sounds distorted. There's still some static. It's crap, but it was almost a 20-minute segment and I knew I wasn't going to say the same things again. So here you are. Well, listen to the segment. When you come back for the next segment after that, the microphone will be working properly again. I promise. Sorry. And I'm back. And indeed, it is now Tuesday, August 28th. Just barely UTC-wise. It's 1:24 UTC, so it's still Tuesday evening in the United States. But, you know, or Monday evening in the United States. But you know how I am about these things. Anyway, I was going to talk a little bit about Isaac, but, you know, there's still uncertainty here. It was heading towards New Orleans, and it looked like there was, you know, it was going to be but it might intensify. As of when I'm recording this, it's it looks like it probably won't intensify much, and it'll come in, they're differing reports, and there's still all kinds of uncertainty about where it's going. So bottom line is, I'm going to shut up about it, and maybe I'll talk about it tomorrow, by which time, you know, we'll know more. And whether it's even worth talking about, or whether it fizzled out, or whether it was a mega disaster. Because, you know, it could be any of the above at the moment. So, anyway, I was going to talk about the third-party candidate quizzes and stuff, but actually something else caught my attention, because I just read an article about it. I've been reading several, and a new one just came on by. And this is Twitter. And the changes Twitter has been making lately. Now, some of you out there may not be familiar with all this, so I will assume lack of knowledge and start from there. Twitter, of course, is, you go in, you log in, you post small text message size, 140 character updates on whatever. You can talk about yourself, you can talk about whatever. The reality of how it's developed is, yeah, there are people who, like, say, I'm going to lunch and stuff, but a big part of it is people sharing links and people using it to point out new content, to comment on what's going on, things like that. So, like, I'm looking at my live Twitter stream right now, and the most recent things are, you know, someone commenting on Republican National Committee rule changes about voting and blah 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 blah. Some comments about Mars stuff. Some things, you know, pictures from the convention. Commentary on the hurricane. All kinds of stuff like this is happening. So, but now the thing is, when Twitter started, one of the things they provided, you know, is a wide open API. Now, anybody out there who doesn't know, that's basically a way to programmatically access the service. So you can write a program to do things with Twitter, as opposed to just being a human being typing things in. And so what this enabled is all kinds of third-party clients, so that, yeah, you could go to the official Twitter website, or you could text Twitter, or, you know, you could use the official Twitter apps on your phone or whatever. But, in addition, there were lots of people building their own that would do all kinds of innovative things, have different user interfaces, things like that. Also, all kinds of other applications built on it that weren't even necessarily clients to let you view tweets and look at tweets, but also things to do analysis, things to look for trends, all kinds of things were built on top of this that people could use in various ways. Well, the problem with this, of course, is that if Twitter actually wants to make money, at some point, they have to do something different. Because, okay, everybody's using all these third-party clients to go back and forth and use Twitter and get information from Twitter and all this kind of stuff. Where does Twitter make the money? Well, they're not selling memberships. There's no charge to use Twitter. I suppose one option would be to initiate some sort of charge, but how many people would they lose? Would it still be worth it? Unknown. The most common direction that companies like this go in is advertising. So what are they going to do with advertising? Well, who knows exactly. They've experimented with sponsored tweets, which are things that come into your timeline and you see that nobody actually tweeted you, either in searches or directly. They're, you know, ads that come up on the site, all the usual things that you can do with advertising. But the problem is all of those rely on you having direct control over how your stuff is presented. And all of these third-party clients, well, you don't have that control. They can display things in whatever want the way they want. They have their own interface. They can present their own ads if they wanted. They could strip out any ads that you add. They could do all kinds of things. So over, some of this started months ago, but sort of the next phase of it seems to have been rolling out the last week or two. Twitter is changing their rules. So third-party applications, for instance, if you're a third-party client, you have a limit in the number of users that you can have without getting Twitter's permission for more, which they may or may not grant. And more recently, the article I just read right before starting to record this bit, is they used to be on every tweet, if you tweeted from a third-party client, it would say via and the name of the client you used, and that name would link back to, you know, the place where the website for that client, so you could go get it and use it yourself. And yeah, hey, everybody's using client X, I'm going to use that one too, it's kind of cool. They've taken that out, so there's no longer that attribution. And they're, yeah, and the third-party clients, the rules are much more restrictive. I mentioned the membership limit, but there are other more technical differences too. And there's no assurance that this is the last wave. They've sort of hinted, you know, and they've hinted for a long time now. Hey, if you are building a business on building third-party clients for Twitter, maybe you shouldn't. Because writing's sort of on the wall. They don't want people to use these things. They want you to use the official Twitter stuff so that they have your eyeball and they can do whatever they're going to end up doing with advertising and not have to worry about all this other stuff. Now, you know, the one natural response is, of course, well, of course, they need to make money. They're going to do what they need to do. So, you know, get used to it. And of course, they have the right to do whatever they're going to do. But a lot of people are thinking, and I tend to agree somewhat, they're killing a lot of what made their service grow rapidly in the way it did and what got people interested. And that's not to say specifically just the client. You know, it's not just, you know, I'm sure a minority of people using the service use third-party clients. Well, I don't know. There are some that are pretty damn popular. But you know, I'm sure lots and lots of people use the plain vanilla Twitter. But the people who don't are the more active, more engaged sort of thought leaders that influence lots of other people. Plus, there's been all kinds of innovation that's been done around the Twitter platform in terms of things automated things using it to do one thing or another, automated feeds that update you on status of various things, things that pull in information and pass it around. All kinds of interesting things have been done. And this is sort of clamping down on those sorts of innovative things that the system could be used for. Now, will enough people care? I mean, like, I like my third-party clients. I use Tweetbot on my iPhone. I sometimes use TweetDeck, which has been bought by Twitter, so it's actually owned by Twitter now, but I actually use the old version from before when they bought it, because the new version sort of sucked. I'm at the moment, I actually have the official Twitter client program up on my Mac, and the actual Twitter website up on the Mac, so I'm using all of these. Would I stop looking at any of these things if the official client became the only option, if these other things all died off? No, probably not. But I'll tell you what, I have plugins installed on my blog that when I make a post, automatically post to Twitter. When at the end of each day, collect whatever I've done on Twitter and pull it back into my blog, so I have a copy there as well. You may have seen, if you look at my blog, the once a day, it's, you know, at Abel Smay from such and such date, whatever. I forget the exact wording on it. And if those went away, or if they made those so that, for instance, I couldn't just display the text of the tweet, but I had to display the text in the way they want me to, in a weird sort of way, in a way that's embedded and I don't really have a copy of it, blah blah blah, you know, then I might stop. I mean, I really only use Twitter right now as a place to link to the things I'm reading to, and it links to my blog post too, but the thing it has that I do directly there that only gets copied to my blog later is, as I'm reading things that I find interesting, I'll post links to them there. So if anybody is interested in sort of, you know, hey, here are the things Sam's reading and thinks are interested, they can follow. Now, probably not a lot of people actually care, but it's also sort of my historical archive of what I've been looking at. And if that went away, then I might stop using it. In fact, I used to use the only reason I'm using Twitter for that now is that Google's RSS feed of shared articles went away, which is where I used to put that kind of stuff. Now, you know, it's integrated with Google Plus, but that same thing isn't there anymore. And so I switched. So anyway, my point is, you're probably not going to see tons of people going away from it for that kind of, you know, taking away technical integration points. But, you know, if they start filling up the whole thing with annoying ads and blah, 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 you might lose some people. But then again, you know, Facebook's not hurting, and I gather they're full of, you know, annoying ads of various sorts. Now, I use an ad blocker, so I probably don't even see half of them. But it's just, it's an annoying tendency when you see something that potentially has, you know, a lot of power based on the fact that it is sort of a neutral technical architecture that other people can build on, trying to monetize that, and because of the monetization, make the service less useful and less interesting. And maybe they'll make crap loads of money on it, but in the meantime, it sucks just a little bit more. And I feel that way about what Google's been doing too. The Google from a few years ago seems like it was better in some ways, because now Google's like pushing all this crap at you. They're pushing Google Plus. They're pushing Google Chrome. There's the sponsored things that get added to the side that keep adding. And you know, they're mixing their own information from the web. It's all like personalized based on your previous history, blah blah blah, and no longer a quote unquote neutral arbitrator of what's important. All of these things are just sort of frustrating because you see something that is good and has a lot of potential as sort of this neutral infrastructure tool, but then when the companies that own them realize, hey, shit, we have to find out a way to make money off it, and not only that, but in many of these cases, we're a public company, so we're not just, you know, satisfied with having, you know, we're making a living. No, they have to grow and grow rapidly and have their stock price go up exponentially and blah, 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 and in the process, they destroy the interesting parts of their service slowly but surely. And I still use Google every day. I still use Twitter every day. I'm not going away from these things anytime soon. But that's the trend and that's the direction. And it makes you, and frankly, you know, you could say the same thing writ large across most internet properties. And the exceptions are like Wikipedia. Wikipedia is run as a nonprofit foundation. They have pledge drives a couple times a year, just like, you know, PBS and NPR and other public radio and television. Pledge drives are annoying, but it sort of keeps the focus on providing that service. Now, I know Wikipedia has its own issues. There are other things like that. There's weird things going on about who gets to edit and what the rules are and as it's grown up. But whatever. Everybody can still edit, but some editors have more power and how they exercise it is interesting and which things are anyway, tangent. Anyway, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not trying to do this socialist utopia, everybody should be doing this stuff for their own good and not for making money, blah, blah, blah. Not at all. I'm just saying, sometimes it's a shame what has to happen to get there. And some of these things really would be good as sort of public utilities run as nonprofits. It would be awesome
if one of the world's billionaires decided to set up a charitable trust to run a non-profit, neutral search engine, good quality, plain vanilla, none of the fancy stuff, get you the information you want, but not be affected by trying to adjust the experience in order to monetize it better. That'd be awesome. Same thing, frankly, for the news industry. A nice, big nonprofit news source also would be cool. Although, even with nonprofits, if they've got big donors, they're subject to the big donors, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean. And for this kind of stuff, I'm not talking about the kinds that do fund drives all the time. I'm talking about set up a permanent endowment or whatever. Anyway, yes, it would be nice. And I'm starting to think it would be nice if bandwidth providers were actually run as public utilities too. You know, just like electric and water and everything else like that. I mean, because the conflict of interest between trying to be a content provider and just get me into my damn bits as fast as possible is starting to get on my nerves. I just want straight out, let me pay by the bit. I understand it has to be metered, that unlimited is not realistic. Set a per-the-bit price, get rid of bullshit tiers, and don't even think about, capping usage, slowing me down, whatever. Which, speaking of, I must say, I got the message from AT&T a few minutes ago. Your data usage has reached 3 gigabytes this month. Using more than 3 gigabytes in future billing cycles will result in reduced speeds. You can use Wi-Fi to help avoid reduced speeds. Visit att.com/data info or call blah 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 for more info. That's fucking bullshit. I'm sorry. I have one of those grandfathered unlimited data plans, and this is yet another thing to try to push me out of it. Whatever. Anyway, I know this is the direction things are going. I'm just cranky and unhappy about it. You know, I want a neutral internet, and I fully respect the right of the companies who run it to do whatever the fuck they want with it. I'm not necessarily saying I want government intervention to make things the way I would like them to be. I'm just saying I would like it better if it wasn't how it was. Okay. Anyway. The question will be, we'll see if Twitter ends up destroying itself by crushing the innovation of all the people who innovated on top of its platform, or whether no one will give a shit, which may also happen. And on that note, let's take a break, and I will be back and talk to you more again on Wednesday, August 29th, if all goes according to plan. Enjoy the break.
Information.
And welcome back. It is indeed Wednesday, August 29th, 2012, now that I've taken another break, and I'm not on my normal microphone. Even though I said I'd be back with my normal microphone and everything working all right, I'm doing this again during a 15-minute break at work because I didn't have a chance earlier and blah, 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 blah. But it'll be a quick break, and then I'll be back to work, although it's almost the end of the day, so really I'm kind of done for the day, but whatever. Anyway, I wanted to talk about a couple things here, and I know the topics that I mentioned before, but You know, in the meantime, in the last however long it's been since I recorded the last segment, there are a couple things going on in the world, and one is, of course, Isaac. You know, did hit Louisiana as a hurricane, but not as like a mega hurricane or anything. It looks like, you know, plenty of damage. Don't want to minimize that, but not anything approaching, you know, what we saw with Katrina 7 years ago. So there's not really too much to say there. And of course, we had the Republican National Convention is kicked off and going in earnest. The first day was like a 5-minute session because of the tropical storm slash hurricane, and they didn't do anything. The second day included some speeches, and I'll paid a little of attention to speeches, but I don't really want to talk about those. The two things that I found interesting are the processes where they changed rules for next time around, and the nomination process itself. So basically, they pushed through a number of rules that next time around, 4 years from now, when we go through this, delegates will more generally be bound. In this time around, there were a lot of cases where delegates were officially unbound. Even if they were elected preferring candidate X or candidate Y, they really were, you know, it's a guy, and you've elected a guy to be a delegate, or a girl, or a woman, or whatever. I don't want to, I'm, whatever the politically correct thing is. Sorry. Anyway, you're electing an actual person who can change their mind and do things, and they're actually a free agent. This will more generally make it the case, as was the case already in some places, but where the delegates elected are bound. You know, you're elected as an Obama delegate, you have to, this is the Republican side. You're elected as a Romney delegate, you have to vote for Romney, etc. That will eliminate a lot of the cases where the Ron Paul folks, even in places where the delegates, a lot of their strategy was based around going through the delegate selection process and winning delegates, even in places where they had not won the popular vote through the process. And so this will be interesting to see how that plays out. Also, they changed the rules for getting nominated at the convention. This time around, you had to have 6 states where you'd won the plurality. Next time around, it'll be 8. Now, you know, in terms of how that stuff plays out, this rule is basically just a rule about trying to get what happened this time to always happen, which is that essentially you end up getting to the end and you only have the one winner. So I just clicked on the wrong thing. As I'm trying to look up data on the fly, as you should never, ever do. But looking real quick, for instance, at the states this time around, even if you look at delegates, then by plurality of delegates, Mitt Romney was ahead in 42 contests. Remember, these add up to more than 50 because they've got the various territories as well. Mitt Romney was ahead in 14. Rick Santorum in 6, Ron Paul in 3, Newt Gingrich in 2. So this time around, by that count, and I'm going off the Wikipedia accounts, there's some dispute over who really got a plurality because of these cases where they're undeclared delegates and officially whatever. Only Romney and Santorum would have been eligible to actually be nominated at the convention under that model. By popular vote in the states, Mitt Romney got 42, Rick Santorum 11, Newt Gingrich 2, and Ron Paul 1. I'm not remembering which one that was. Anyway, like, who did Ron Paul get? Some island somewhere. Anyway, all of this makes it less it's all about getting it so that whoever takes the lead early in the process and you know, the whole delegate process is intentionally, you know, not, you know, we don't decide these by popular vote. There isn't a nationwide primary. I think it would be very interesting if we did have those, but we don't. And so this is all about letting the winning candidate take control easily and eliminate sort of fights and things like that and centralize the power so that the there was another rule that passed, by the way, that lets the central committee of the Republican Party, I forget what it's actually called. It's not central committee. That sounds communist. But lets them make decisions about rules in between the conventions without having a majority vote of a full convention. And that potentially makes it so that the party insiders, the folks who are in charge now, can change the rules around to consolidate their future power and make it harder for people from outside, like Paul's people, to get any traction. And then, of course, you know, like I mentioned, the six states. By some counts, Paul did have a plurality in six states, but there were a number of shenanigans and things that happened. And so, for instance, at the very last moment, half of the main delegation was replaced. And there was a dispute over who was the delegation and blah, blah, blah. There was a dispute in Louisiana, too. There was a dispute in a bunch of different places. Anyway, in the end, he did not meet the threshold. He was not nominated. So the official count at the convention, there was only one candidate. There was only Romney, and he won. Now, even if you did count the other votes, he still won handily, of course. But it does look different, you know, to say, you know, the official count is, you know, Romney 2061, Paul 190 versus Romney 2061 unopposed. And of course, this is after, you know, Santorum and Gingrich released their delegates and encouraged them to vote for Romney. So there was another about just under 400 delegates there. And so it looks like a different kind of race, and the, you know, the Republicans can do whatever they want here, but what they ended up doing is being very heavy-handed about it. They took all of these things that the Paul folks wanted. You know, they wanted rules to be more open, to allow the grassroots of the party to be more involved in determining rules changes, to you know, to make it easier for candidates to get out there, et cetera. And it wasn't just the Paulites, by the way. A lot of the Tea Party folks were you know, in this game as well. I saw Michelle Malkin tweeting about a bunch of this stuff, for instance. And then just, like, you know, let the guy go into nomination. Let the votes for Ron Paul actually be counted at the convention. How much would it actually have hurt Romney to say, oh, and Ron Paul came in a very, very distant second, as opposed to having the official count be, you know, no opposition? I don't know. You know, look, the party process is an insider's process. It always has been. You know, long ago, we didn't even bother with primaries and things. It was all about the insiders picking more insiders and choosing their candidate. And in some ways, the conventions were much more exciting when that was the case. But these days, we have the process in place. And you can make arguments about it. Like, Paul got his delegates not through winning the popular vote in any elections, but through manipulating the process and getting activists to show up to events where only activists show up. And not the general population, or even the general population of the party. And that's not super democratic either. Yeah, you know, a strong argument could be made for, let's scrap all this entirely and have a national primary, one-time vote, one day, you know, whoever gets to the top is the nominee. Or, you know, you allocate delegates based on that one-time popular vote, and then you have them hash it out at a convention with multiple ballots until they pick somebody. Now, that would be fun, because most likely nobody would get a majority on the first time around on that kind of a contest. But, you know, bottom line, the convention systematically went about shutting down every proposal from the Paul folks, in most cases without allowing an actual vote. So, for instance, the Rules Committee made recommendations, and the Paul folks were going to submit a minority report with it. The minority report was not allowed. The Paul people wanted to have an actual vote on the rules change, but it was declared the ayes have it on a voice vote, with repeated calls from the audience, point of order, et cetera, asking to do something else, completely ignored by the people at the podium. Boom, done, move on. And then, of course, the way it ended up, he didn't meet the 6-state threshold that already existed, so that's fine. But, if you wanted to make these people at all happy or welcome or comfortable, you could have let them vote on their damn candidate. For that matter, you could have let the Santorum and Gingrich people vote for theirs too, although they released their delegates. But you could have let the Ron Paul people actually have their vote, at least give them that. But no, instead it was shut down. Your vote doesn't even count. If you don't vote for Mitt Romney, we're not even going to list it. It's not there. Look, the bottom line for this, for like Paulites and folks like that, you aren't welcome in the Republican Party. That is the loud and clear message here. The Republican Party is not setting up a big tent that includes people like Ron Paul and the more libertarian wing of the party. Now, don't get me wrong. I went through the process early on supporting Ron Paul as a Ron Paul delegate, reserving my rights for the general election. I have no idea what the hell I would have done if there was a Ron Paul versus Obama versus Johnson election. I'm not sure I would have voted for Ron Paul there, but it was very clear to me that of the Republicans, Ron Paul was the best. Because, all the rest were batshit crazy, except for Johnson when he was running as a Republican. And Huntsman. Huntsman wasn't bad either. But these folks, got out of the race. The other folks got out of the race early, and of course Ron Paul is Ron Paul. But look, they don't want you. The Ron Paul idea here is sort of to remake the Republican Party from the inside, and by all means, the Ron Paul contingent did better this time around than they did 4 years from now, and maybe if Rand Paul runs in 4 years, they'll do even better next time around. I don't know. But the main part of the party doesn't want you. The Republicans are not a libertarian party. Well, small L libertarian. They do not believe in small government. Bottom line, whatever rhetoric comes out of it, the Republican Party does not believe in limited government. They believe in a very invasive government, just in different areas that the Democrats want to invade. They believe in a strong interventionist military policy and foreign policy. They believe in a very high-handed intervention in personal affairs, from the gay marriage issue to reproductive rights to whether or not you can watch porn. The Republicans don't want you guys. The libertarian-leaning guys, the Republican Party is not the place for you. Time to leave. And I've seen some anecdotal notions that a whole bunch of the Ron Paul supporters are, a good deal of them probably are going to end up supporting Johnson in the general election. That's the Libertarian Party candidate who was previously Republican governor. But that's where you need to go. At the same time, it's one of these hard issues because the demographics are not good for the kind of Republicans that are represented by the Tea Party or the religious right. Those folks are dying out. And here's one thing, people talk about, the demographics being against the Republicans, and they're going to diminish into a smaller and smaller, less relevant party over the years if things keep up. But the thing is, things don't keep up. The Republican Party of 2012 looks a lot different than the 2000, the Republican Party of 1962, which looks a lot different than the Republican Party of 1912. You know, the parties move around, they shift, they change. The Republican Party of 20 years from now, 30 years from now, 50 years from now is going to look nothing like the Republican Party from today. And yes, you know, it could break up into multiple pieces and, you know, you get a new party arising and replacing the existing Republican Party. And that would be very interesting to watch. But more likely, the Republican Party will shift over time. But for the moment, for the short term, if you're a libertarian-oriented type person, the Republican Party is not a happy home for you. Go ahead and support the actual Libertarian Party. For once, they've got a candidate who's actually got the kind of experience you generally associate with a successful presidential candidate. He's been a governor. He doesn't appear to be a complete loon. In various previous years, the Libertarians have nominated people who had, you know, various levels of inadequate experience and or were just way off the deep end. Last time around, they nominated Bob Barr, for God's sake. You know, I'm generally sympathetic to the libertarians, but Bob Barr, really? He's no libertarian. Anyway, bottom line, move. Get out. You know, at least, you know, in the general election, maybe you can, you know, have Johnson get like 2% instead of 0.5%. You know, I don't know that anybody thinks he's going to do much better than that. But, you know, build the new thing, move there. I don't know, because the Republicans don't want you. The Democrats don't want you. Don't want us, I guess, because I largely sympathize with that group. Although, whenever I'm here sort of diehard Libertarian Party type folks, I'm always like turned off because they're way off the deep end. The excited partisans about from any political party are way off the deep end to me. So please take that in that context. I don't like the folks who are diehard partisans, period. Some of the diehard libertarians concern me. I want a nice moderate person with a libertarian bent, but not dogmatic about it. Anyway, I'm over the 15 minutes I'd allocated to do this segment, so I should wrap it up. I did want to mention one other thing. This afternoon, Obama did a AMA, Ask Me Anything, on Reddit, which I thought was very interesting for the fact that he did it. The actual thing, looking at it, sorry, Obama, kind of lame. He answered like 5 questions. You know, I've looked at previous AMAs by other people where they've answered tons and tons of questions and the, you know, answers are fairly off the cuff. Obama's looked like he quite possibly was typing them in himself because there was, you know, punctuation errors, grammar errors, lowercase letters, who knows, maybe he had an aide there. But the words themselves looked like, you know, words that somebody had spent some time reading over to make sure that they were, you know, okay and said all the right things and didn't accidentally have a gaffe in them and stuff like that. And that kind of defeats the purpose. You know, you want to talk spontaneously and off the cuff and get into areas that aren't safe. And I know that's not the right thing to do in a political campaign necessarily because everybody can pull apart everything. This is the kind of thing I'd like to see him do sort of towards the end of his second term. You know, do this for real. Nobody looking over your head, shoulders, no avoiding the hard or awkward questions, no trying to write the answer that looks the best for re-election. Just have a conversation. Anyway, not this time. That's it for this segment. We probably will do one more on Thursday. As I'm speaking, it's very close to the end of Wednesday UTC. It's 23:38. So end of the day. And from the point of view of Pacific time, it's almost 5 o'clock, so close to the end of the work day too. And my break has gone on too long. I've said that before, so I should stop. Damn it. You know, this is what I get for taking a break. Anyway, whatever. We'll be back after this with another segment on some other topic yet to be determined. We shall see. See you after the break.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
And I'm back. And indeed, it is now Thursday, August 30th. I'm now in the period of time right before it's time to go to work, you know, and I really should be leaving in the next few minutes. So we probably won't make this too long. Couple things. One, there were some speeches at the Republican convention that are probably worth talking about in some way. There was the Ann Romney speech, the Governor Christie speech, the Condoleezza Rice speech, and the Paul Ryan speech. All of these have gotten some buzz. Now, however, I haven't watched any of them. I think I had the Ann Romney one on in the background while I was doing something else, but I didn't really pay attention. I've read some commentary on all four of these speeches, but I haven't watched them. So, like, I don't know. And also, you know, hey, we can leave this and talk about it when Yvonne's here. So I am tempted to say things about all of those, though. Ah! Okay, so what the hell? We'll do the short version. Ann Romney and Christie, I didn't really give a crap about either one, to be honest. Ann Romney's doing the typical political spouse thing. Governor Christie apparently sort of gave a speech that sounded like he was running for the next Republican nomination, but it was sort of like, eh, whatever. We'll see. We're a long way from 2016. Apparently, Condi brought the house down, and lots of people were saying, you know, she sounded like the first adult at the table this time around, and she gave a serious speech, and she sounded like she should be running for president. And, there was a lot on Twitter going on about people being like, Condi 2016, Condi 2016. And Condi did a bunch of, you know, she was part of the awful Bush administration doing a bunch of awful things. From all reports, she was kind of ineffective in the areas where there were some areas where what she was advocating for was a better policy than what the administration actually ended up doing, but she was not effective at getting anyone to pay attention to her. She was, you know, steamrolled by Cheney and company at every turn, apparently. So I don't know how good she'd be, but I would love a Republican Party where she actually could be a contender. I don't think we're there anytime soon. She's pro-life. She's socially liberal on lots of issues. There's the perennial thing where she's single. She's been single as long as anyone can remember. So there are persistent rumors that she's actually a lesbian. And that is when you don't pay attention to the rumors that were saying that she was having an affair with George W. Bush. So who knows which? I mean, it's probably neither one of those is probably true. Who knows? But the point is, there are all kinds of things like that out there and swirling. And, you know, what skeletons does she have in her closet? She's never been a political figure per se. She's been more on the policy and implementation side of things, as opposed to someone who runs for office and does this thing. So who knows what kind of skeleton she's got in her closet? And, you know, things like, and let's say for the sake of argument, she is, you know, a lesbian. That wouldn't hurt her, in certain circles. But in today's Republican Party, I'm guessing that would be the end of it. As would the pro-life thing. I has she come out on gay marriage? I forget. So I won't go there. I don't remember. But anyway, in today's Republican Party, no freaking way. In a more reasonable Republican Party, maybe she'd be a contender. But, you know, she's sort of, I'm not going to say she's a moderate. I'm not going to say she's a liberal, but she's not your bloodthirsty right-wing religious conservative and or neocon in quite the same way as everybody else is. Although, obviously, she, you know, had a lot of neocon stuff going on in the Bush administration. She's, you know, like she got a standing ovation, et cetera, at the Republican convention, but people don't. She would never actually be able to fight for a Republican nomination in the current Republican Party. Who knows if they had at some point get trounced by, you know, putting up, you know, far extremist Tea Party folks time and time again. Then maybe at some point they'll come back around to moderation. And by the way, I don't think this is the year anyway. Like, you know, maybe Ryan fits that classification, but Romney, you know, his background really is the more moderate background. Now he's been pandering like hell to the right wing of his party, but you know, his actual governing background is more moderate. And you know, you look at the polls too, and it's a closely divided country. You know, it's not like you're seeing, you know, mass rejection of the Republican ticket because they're too extreme. You know, my analysis shows, you know, Obama's still got a bit of an advantage in the Electoral College, but you know, this is not, you know, a 60-40 election. You know, this is not going to be a blowout. This is likely going to be tighter than it was in 2008. And so sometimes, you know, as I have moved away from, you know, like I've said many times, you know, I like George H.W. Bush. Eisenhower sounds good, although I, you know, wasn't around back then. You know, even Nixon had his good points, you know, so did Reagan. I can find sort of positive things to feel about many Republicans from the bygone era. A lot of the Republicans of today, I'm just like, they're so far off the reservation, I don't understand. But the thing to remember, and I have trouble comprehending this, to be honest, nearly half the American population supports them. They are not really total out there fringe, you know. And maybe there's this vast middle that, you know, sort of holds their nose at the extreme stuff, but still thinks the Republican is better on average. And I think that's probably a lot of what's going on. But the bottom line is they're not being... This is not a situation where the Republican Party is getting fundamentally repudiated for, you know, having people, you know, in control of the party that, you know, deny science and, you know, aren't friendly towards gays and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's just not what's going on. But anyway, moving on, the other speech, Paul Ryan. And here I go. I'm talking all about the convention speeches. I start out by saying I'm not going to talk about the convention speeches, and here I go. So, you know, I was thinking about talking about Apple, Samsung, but no, it's going to be convention speeches because we're almost at an hour here. Anyway, Ryan, again, also haven't watched, but the massive volume on Twitter has all been about how the entire speech was full of things that, if not outright falsehoods, were incredibly misleading. And Whether or not he would be called out for that, and whether or not, even if he did, it mattered. As examples, things like hammering Obama for not supporting the Simpson-Bowles report, when in fact Ryan was on that commission and voted against the proposal, and is one of the reasons that there was no actual bipartisan recommendation that came out of that commission, because they couldn't come to an agreement because Ryan was like, no. That's no good, and even said no to some compromises that were, more conservative friendly than the majority report that came out of that, and also things like talking about the credit downgrade that happened on Obama's watch without mentioning that, well, what caused the credit downgrade? The fact that Congress refused to increase the debt limit and caused a crisis being. And that was led by who? Amongst others, Paul Ryan. So, yeah, and there were more examples, and they went through this. But and one thing that's, also there was a quote, and I'm going to forget. I did forget. I have no idea. But somebody in the Romney administration was actually quoted on the record saying something about the fact-checking organizations and the fact that, we're not going to let our campaign be defined by the fact-checking organizations, and basically saying almost outright that they feel free to, just say things that just plain aren't true. And there are lots of things that are coming up. I mean, look, presidential campaigns are full of exaggerations and misrepresentations and trying to make your guy look good and the other guy look bad. But generally, you at least try to stick with, you pick the facts that are good for your guy, but you stick with things that like have some basis in reality. But more and more, like, some of these things are just saying things that, like, if you look at them objectively, are like not even close. I mean, and there's the you didn't build this gaffe that, of course, they've been, repeating time and time again at the convention, which, of course, isn't what Obama was saying, if you look at it. And every person that they bring up as an example of, here's somebody who built it themselves. If you actually look at it in the prism of Obama's point there in terms of, well, the infrastructure provided by the government actually helps you get to where you're going, whether it be roads and bridges or whether it be, small business startup loans or whatever, almost every example they've brought up, you look at the actual history and it's like, oh yeah, they were helped by the government too. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see, because like they are really taking to heart the notion, and that we've talked about on this show before, that if you say something, even if somebody comes around later and says, well, actually that was wrong, and here's why it's wrong, and point, the low information voters who aren't paying a lot of attention are only going to get the first part. They're going to hear what was originally said. They're not going to hear the correction. If they do hear the correction, they may doubt the source, because chances are, if Romney or Ryan or one of the commercials done on their behalf says something false, the people who are going to be pointing out that it's false are going to be either actual Democratic partisans, which of course, who's going to trust them, or the media. And we all know the media is in the pocket of the left wing. So they're just, the people doing the corrections are out to get them. And we've actually seen some defenses this morning, a stream of things where people are basically sort of defending, it doesn't have to be exactly true, and not paying attention to the fact-checking organizations, and they don't use those words, of course, but it's like, it's infuriating. And of course, if you do have sort of your honest conservative Republican folks, some of them may realize this stuff is over the top and just plain not true, but they'll shut up about it and they'll be quiet and they'll vote for their guy. You know, you're not going to see, you know, a diehard Republican, you know, come out there publicly and say, well, actually, Romney and Ryan are lying about this. I still think they're the right candidate, but they're lying about this. That's just not going to happen. And if it did, that person would, you know, be thrown off the reservation as well. Interesting to watch. Interesting to watch. There is the Romney speech coming up, and maybe I'll try to like watch these other speeches sometime before I talk to Yvonne next, just to make sure I've actually seen the damn things. Because, you know, I was out and about, I was doing other things. I followed the commentary on Twitter mostly way delayed. Like, I was reading about Condi Rice's speech and the reactions to it over 12 hours after it happened. Yeah, whatever. You know, but like, really, most people, yeah, that they're going to get the news reports about it too. Most people don't watch these things live. I usually try to, but you know, things going on. What can I say? Anyway, we're over an hour, so I'm going to wrap this up. I also have to get to work. I should have left 10 minutes ago, something like that. Although the first thing isn't like I don't have a hard open. Anyway. Thank you for listening to Curmudgeon's Corner this week. Here, once again, I alone have rambled for over an hour, including 20 minutes that's barely listenable because the audio quality sucked. So thank you for sticking with us. If you have any questions, comments, thoughts, email me at abelsmay.com. Tweet me at abelsmay, etc. I'm on Google Plus. You can see me there too, Samuel Minter. I'm also on Facebook, but you know, heads up, I'm probably not going to accept your friend's request if I don't know you personally. If there are a bunch of people out there clamoring to follow me on Facebook that don't know me personally, let me know and maybe I'll do something about it. But I don't post anything there that's not on my blog anyway, so it's kind of pointless. Anyway, thank you. Enjoy your week. We'll talk to you later. Goodbye.